Welcome back to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. Now it's time for another iconic pair.
Please don't go. Come in, please. Oh, please. I'm sorry. Please. Please.
Piggy.
Please.
Piggy, hold it.
Please.
Piggy.
Please. Please.
Piggy.
Please.
You're overacting.
What?
You're overacting. You're hamming it up.
Their creator was Jim Henson, a guy who managed to take puppets, which have been around for centuries, and breathe new life into them. Part of his secret was loving and embracing new technology, which enabled him to offer experiences to audiences that they had never had before. And another key for Henson was being unafraid to earn some serious cash. Liz Stevens is the author of Make Art, Make Money: Lessons from Jim Henson on Fueling Your Creative Career. Liz, thanks for coming in.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So when people think of Jim Henson, they think of puppets. It's sort of the first thing. What did he do so differently with puppets, which, of course, had existed way before Jim Henson came along?
Yeah. You know, he wasn't the first person to put puppets on TV, but he really adapted this old technology of puppetry, which had been around for millennia, to television. I think that his most important achievement was the monitor feedback system that he kind of set up. Television was totally new in the 1950s, and he had got his first TV in 1950. 5 years later, he was on TV. He was making his own puppet show, Salmon Friends. So his wife said later that, you know, in his spare time, he'd always be in the control room, talking to the technicians, figuring out how the cameras worked. The biggest achievement that I think, you know, technologically his best invention was this setup. So if you looked at Jim Henson, some footage now of him puppeteering, he's not looking at the puppet and he's not looking at the camera. He's looking actually at a monitor that's at his feet. So the system is a closed circuit TV. And what it does, it is allows him to actually see exactly what the viewer at home sees. This can be underestimated, but in the first episode of Sesame Street, Bert and Ernie kind of talked to the camera. They talked to the kids at home, and the kids actually responded lightning quick to that. They were talking back to the TV. That's because the characters were making eye contact. So it's almost like that kind of system like Errol Morris has for documentaries, where it's technology and it produces this really human effect of connection with the viewer.
How was Jim Henson able to get on TV so quickly in the early days? I mean, you said it's new in the 1950s. He's on in the 1950s.
Yeah, it's really amazing. But I think that's the effect of new technology. And, you know, it was local TV. And his own show was 5 minutes long. It was kind of a lead-in to the news every night.
And it was puppets?
Yeah, it was puppets.
Puppets as a lead-in to the news.
Yeah. The audience was for, you know, businessmen who came home from work. It was right before 6 o'clock and right before 11 o'clock. And they made jokes about the news, like Chet Huntley.
Here first we have...
Chet Huntley, NBC News, New York.
Yes, indeed, but let's not be quite so formal. Why don't you just call me Kermit, and I'll call you, well, what would you like me to call you?
Chet Huntley.
Oh, okay, Chet Huntley.
You know, from there, he always wanted to get bigger and bigger and break barriers. And if somebody said it can't be done, then he would try to do it. So that became The Muppet Show. You know, from there, he wanted to go to Hollywood. That became The Muppet Movie.
I just can't imagine that you've ever been gone. It's not starting over. It's just going on
together again. Now we're here and there.
And then he wanted to do 3D movies. He started small with what he could do, which was puppetry, and kind of got to this really amazing place.
Did he believe that puppetry, the most exciting puppetry, was for kids, was for adults? I mean, you talked about him making fun in some ways of Chet Huntley and these sort of early broadcasters. Who did he want to reach with puppetry?
He always wanted to reach adults, and I think that he didn't want to exclude kids, but he did at times feel pigeonholed, especially because Sesame Street made him a household name and made the Muppets basically every child's friend. And he actually called up Joan Cooney, who runs Sesame Street, and said, "You ruined my life. You know, nobody's going to think of me as an adult entertainer now." And so he fought against that, and I think after that was when he got the Muppet Show and kind of proved, well, this works for adults.
Phenomena. Manamana. Manamana.
It was called by Time Magazine the most adult show on TV and the most watched show on Earth because it was broadcast in 106 countries. you know, he had the last laugh, but he kind of had to push back against these things, people telling him puppets are for kids.
We think of Sesame Street as so breakthrough, at least at the time that it debuted. Did he really feel that way, like it ruined his life?
You know, I think he was joking because he wasn't, you know, the kind of man who would really blame someone for ruining his life. I think that, you know, he meditated a lot. He was very, he flowed with life. But I think that that was something he didn't just want to do what people said you have to do. You know, he wanted to do everything.
You argue that Henson's innovativeness extended in some ways beyond the art that he did, but to money, and that he wanted to figure out ways that art could be art, but it could also earn him a decent living.
Yeah, he had a really unique role as both an artist and entrepreneur. He was different from most artists. He thought differently because, you know, he made a lot of money. He thought differently from most businessmen because he spent a lot of money on the art, on developing it, much more than a typically prudent businessman would spend on things. And his producer, Larry Merkin, said he thought of it as R&D, that it was, you know, he would use his own money first before he even had a network interested to seed these projects and grow them to the stage that they needed to be at. I'm thinking of The Dark Crystal and Fraggle Rock, which ended up being these like really intricate worlds created from kind of the ground up.
Down at Fraggle Rock.
You know, we think about people, Jim Henson's a good example, Walt Disney, Steven Spielberg, Andy Warhol, people who were both incredibly creative, but also did not overlook the fact that they wanted to make money from the art that they created. And I wonder if you think that, you know, artistic innovation is devalued in some ways, or people think that artistic innovation is devalued if you really cash in on it.
You know, there's that attitude or the traditional thinking that you have to be a starving artist and good art doesn't make money. You know, I think it's too bad because a lot of really good art does make money, but not as much as good technology. And I think it's a kernel of truth there. Not that artists can't make money, but that it's harder for artists, I think, than, say, somebody who invents a new technology. And if you look at, you know, Disney or Spielberg or Henson or Pixar, all of them were artists. But if they hadn't been kind of diving into the new technology, really developing innovative tech solutions, I don't know that they would be financially successful. So that's one thing that I've noticed.
I'm guessing then that if Jim Henson were alive today, he would be using the really cutting-edge approaches to creating media.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think that he would have dropped everything, like dropped all the old techniques and just gone digital, which is kind of what Disney Studios did. They closed down their hand-drawn animation studios because they thought, well, people want digital now. This is the future. But Henson himself said, you know, one technique doesn't negate the other. So he really liked to combine old technology, new technology, basically whatever worked. If you watch The Muppets Take Manhattan, you have that really complex bicycle scene. They're riding bicycles in the park, doing figure eights. And, you know, that was done with a crane, with rotating platforms. It's like the most intricate thing they probably ever did. And that was, you know, something so memorable because you think, well, how did they do that? But at the same time, Henson was also using mirrors, a simple trick like, you know, if Kermit is sitting on a stool, and there's no puppeteer underneath, you know, it's because of just this really simple technological trick from, you know, centuries ago where you put a mirror halfway down, slicing the legs of the stool in half. And Jim Henson was right behind there. And that's another kind of aha moment where you're like, oh, how did they do that? That's so amazing. But it doesn't have to be new technology.
You have seen, obviously, we've all seen over the last few years, this tremendous revival of interest in the Muppets, new Muppet movies. When you think about how Jim Henson would think about that revival and those new movies, what do you think his reaction would be?
I think he would be excited. I mean, I think that he really wanted these characters to be like Mickey Mouse, something that, you know, you give to the next generation. I think to some extent people were already doing that, no matter if we had new Muppet movies or not. You know, I've heard of people being so excited to show Fraggle Rock to their kids. And I'm one of those people who would love to do that. And when my niece is old enough, I can't wait to show her that. And as somebody who's kind of studied Henson as an entrepreneur for the past few years, I keep thinking, I see in all of the old shows this spirit of let's have a startup, let's do our thing, let's work really hard, let's work together, but let's make something amazing. And you see, like, in the nursery, the Muppet Babies kind of feel like that. And in Fraggle Rock, the group of the Fraggles in the Rock kind of feel like that. So I almost think that there's these workplace lessons that are almost encapsulated in the original shows that kind of tell me, this is what I want my work to be like. Watching all the behind-the-scenes shows of the Muppets, I kind of think, oh, I wish I could have that much fun at work. And it was hard work, but, you know, it was something worth doing. And I think so many people are hungry for that. In the new movies, I think it doesn't have as much of that spirit because that's not what created it. It was created more by a, you know, Disney corporation wanting a corporate icon to, you know, have this franchise and to sell things. And then there are creative people within the Muppets group who are still kind of carrying the torch and holding on to what the Muppets are. So in these new movies, I see a lot of the tension between kind of the big company, the parent, and then the subsidiary company. You know, so I'm seeing a lot of that stuff. But kids don't see that. And that's the important thing, because I think that that's what Henson wanted.
Elizabeth Hyde Stevens is the author of Make Art, Make Money, Lessons from Jim Henson on Fueling Your Creative Career. Liz Stevens, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
If just one person believes in you, deep enough and strong enough believes in you, hard enough and long enough, before you knew it, someone else would think, if he can do it.